I'm Nora Flaherty. This is MPBN Radio, and you're listening to Maine Things Considered. On the program this evening, a new effort to get the state to fund 55% of public education, 12 years after voters approved an initiative to do just that. And the details on the investigation into the E. coli death of a Maine toddler. Those stories in a moment. First, this news. This is Maine Things Considered on MPBN Radio. I'm Nora Flaherty. More than 400 bills are making their way through the legislative pipeline, including several controversial proposals dealing with such issues as the disposal of fetal tissue, firearms background checks, and new restrictions on the power of the governor's office. But as A.J. Higgins reports, legislative leaders appear inclined to reject the overwhelming majority of the measures.
The two top leaders of the legislature say the 10-member legislative council charged with making the final determination on which new bills will make it into next year's legislative session will apply strict criteria when making their choices. And some choices may be easier to make than others. Representative Larry Lockman, a Republican from Amherst, thinks it's time to start randomly drug testing lawmakers. While House Majority Leader Jeff McCabe of Skowhegan wants to require the governor to promptly fill vacant commission slots. Republican Senate President Mike Thibodeau from Winterport says bills trying to make a political statement won't make it.
If there's something that's politically motivated that is, not truly an emergency nature, it's highly unlikely that it would get through.
House Speaker Mark Eaves, a Democrat from North Berwick, agrees. He says leaders have to limit new bills to true emergency matters because hundreds of bills, some that are very complicated, have been held over for consideration in January.
They do truly need to be time-sensitive or emergency in nature. And a lot of the bills that we've seen so far, particularly the ones that have gotten more attention, whether it's around Planned Parenthood, and other things, those just aren't going to go anywhere.
Because of political divisions in the Maine legislature, each party holds 5 seats on the legislative council, setting the stage for a number of deadlocked votes if consideration should happen to divide along party lines. The legislative council will meet October 22nd to hear personally from the bill's sponsors, who briefly will explain why the legislation is needed. If the bill fails to attract a majority vote from the panel, lawmakers will get one more opportunity to appeal the decision next month before the legislature returns in January. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
It's been 12 years since voters approved an initiative requiring the state to fund 55% of the cost of public education. But Maine has never met that threshold. Instead, towns have increasingly had to raise property taxes and cut services in an effort to make up the difference. Now, a coalition of Maine students, parents, teachers, and community members is asking voters to weigh in again with a proposed 2016 ballot measure seeking to raise $110 million for public education by requiring the state's wealthiest residents to pay more in taxes. Jay Field has details.
Amanda Cooper teaches 8th grade English and social studies at Gorham Middle School. Cooper has been a classroom teacher in Maine for 15 years. When she started out, Cooper says her average class size was between 17 and 22 kids. Now, because of decreased funding, ed tech and teacher positions have been cut in recent years, and class sizes have jumped to as many as 27 students.
That's a lot of kids. Sometimes we don't have enough desks.
Cooper says that's made life in the classroom tough on Gorham Middle School's remaining teachers and their students.
That significantly impacts students, particularly special education students, who sometimes have some pretty significant needs.
These dynamics are playing out in countless schools and communities across the state, be they rural, suburban, or urban. Teresa Gillies has 2 kids in school in Brunswick, where she teaches music and her husband runs a tree care business. Her son, who's in junior high school, loves science.
They really have had to cut back on experiments in the junior high specifically. Just no funding to even keep the gas, hooked up in the science labs.
Gillies says Brunswick, like many communities in recent years, has had to raise property taxes in an effort to fill the gaps. But this dynamic is becoming increasingly unsustainable as many homeowners see their wages remain flat and the number of people living on fixed incomes in Maine goes up as the state's population continues to age.
Yeah, we really need to get more help funding our schools.
That reality has led Gillies and Amanda Cooper to throw their support behind a proposed citizens initiative designed to do just that. The Stand Up for Students campaign, launched Wednesday afternoon in Portland, asks voters to approve a measure to raise $110 million for Maine schools. Under the plan, wealthy Maine households would pay an additional $30 in taxes for every additional $1,000 they make over $200,000. The proposal, though, is likely to trigger a political fight at a time when Republican Governor Paul LePage is backing a voter referendum to eliminate the state income tax. The Maine Heritage Policy Center, a conservative think tank, and the group Maine Taxpayers United did not return requests for comment by airtime. John Costin, who supports the Stand Up for Students initiative, runs Veneer Services Unlimited, a small business in Kennebunk. I asked Costin what he would say to customers of his who might complain that it's simply unfair to make the state's wealthy residents responsible for making sure that Maine honors its pledge to pay 55% of the cost of public education.
Well, I would say that an investment in K-12 education is an investment that pays dividends to all Mainers. And unfortunately, the burden of not making that investment really falls the heaviest on the least affluent Mainers.
Supporters must collect 62,000 signatures for the Stand Up for Students initiative to appear on the November 2016 ballot. For MPBN News, I'm Jay Field.
This is Maine Things Considered. I'm Nora Flaherty. An E. coli infection claimed the life of a 20-month-old toddler on Monday, and another toddler is in critical condition at Maine Medical Center, battling the same illness. The common link between the two children is they each visited a petting zoo at a local fair. As the state investigates to determine the source of the infections, physicians are emphasizing safety measures individuals can take to prevent E. coli infections. Patty White has more.
John Gay of Poland says he took his son Colton to the Oxford County Fair on two separate days during the third week of September.
And part of that just normal family fun day was to go visit the animals and the petting zoo.
Within a week, Colton became ill with cold-like symptoms. When he started to have bloody diarrhea, Gay says their doctor admitted Colton to a hospital.
And that started essentially a week of terror and panic as we tried to figure out what was going on with our son. And we later found out he contracted HUS.
HUS, or hemolytic uremic syndrome, is a toxin that's produced by E. coli that causes kidney failure, says Dr. Dora Ann Mills, the vice president of clinical affairs at the University of New England and a former director of the Maine CDC. Mills says E. coli are part of the normal bacteria in human and animal intestines, but
some are very pathogenic, meaning they can cause illness and can cause very severe illness, particularly those types of E. coli that you can find in other animals besides, you know, humans.
Food, including undercooked beef, is a common source of E. coli infections in humans, but animals can also be a source. John Gay suspects the petting zoo because while Colton was being treated at Maine Medical Center, Gay met another family whose son is also battling HUS. After comparing notes, Gay says the petting zoo was the common link.
We even compared the food we ate at the fair, and nothing seemed to match.
State veterinarian Michelle Walsh says one of the best ways to prevent E. coli infection from animals is to wash hands after touching them.
We'll continue to try to make this message fresh and new, and make sure that facilities are available, readily available at all these animal exhibitions. It's really important.
John Gay says his son did wash his hands after the petting zoo, but he still developed HUS and the illness took his life on Monday morning. The state CDC would not comment specifically on the individual HUS cases, other than to confirm that it's investigating two cases from Androscoggin County. As Gay waits for solid answers, he says he wants to raise awareness so that other parents can either avoid exposing their children to E. coli or take preventive measures. For MPBN News, I'm Patty White.
Finally, today, Portland city officials are proposing a measure that would grant some municipal oversight of independent transportation companies like the rideshare service Uber. The move is an attempt to partially roll back a bill passed by the state legislature earlier this year, effectively giving operators like Uber freedom from municipal control as long as they meet certain state standards. It's also a response to concerns raised by Portland taxi drivers who serve the city's jetport and say their livelihoods are being threatened by an unfair playing field. Tom Porter has our story.
Bashir Sharia is one of a handful of taxi drivers waiting outside baggage claim at the Portland jetport one recent weekday afternoon. He runs the airport cab taxi service, operating 18 cabs, two of which he owns, and all of which have to pay the city more than $800 a year for a permit to wait inside the airport to pick up customers. They also have to impose a $1.50 surcharge for each fare collected at the jetport. Sharia says life is getting increasingly hard for him and his drivers because Uber cars, which incoming travellers can summon via a smartphone app, don't have to follow any of these regulations.
We have seen a long line of Uber in front of the terminal, and we are here, people going there, so they destroy our business.
More of his drivers are staying at home, he says, and if this goes on, he'll be out of business soon.
We don't mind any competition. If they come here and pay what we pay, we are ready to accept that.
While the cabbies are concerned about fair competition, for airport officials, it's more a question of traffic flow and customer safety.
We really can't have commercial vehicles dwelling immediately outside of baggage claim, but that's the incentive under the TNC program.
Jetport director Paul Bradbury is referring here to transportation network companies, in this case Uber. Under their model, it's the driver closest to the customer who gets the fare, which incentivizes Uber drivers to idle outside baggage claim and in the nearby cell phone lot, even though they're technically not allowed to do so unless they have a designated pickup. Airport officials can and do move on Uber drivers who are seen to be loitering, says Bradbury, but new legislation that's being proposed would make it easier to control the situation.
Really, all we need is to have the ability to regulate TNCs at the airport, and this statute would allow us to do that. And we would simply put it into our normal ground transportation rules that are posted for commercial operators at the airport. But under the current state statute, we can't post rules that would apply to a TNC.
A bill passed this summer requires TNCs in Maine to abide by statewide insurance and safety regulations and prohibits municipalities from adopting their own regulations. The law also requires Uber to pay a $10,000 annual fee to the state. Having heard complaints from the jetport, Democratic State Senator Anne Haskell of Portland is drafting legislation that would return some of this oversight to municipalities. She's concerned that Uber drivers at the airport appear to be in direct competition with the taxi cabs.
Which is fine, but if they're going to be in competition at the airport itself, they should have to obey the same parking and movement restrictions that the taxi cabs do.
Haskell says her bill, which is still being crafted, would not seek to regulate the activity of TNCs outside the Portland jetport. But city manager Jonathan Jennings says he would like to see the change expanded citywide.
Municipalities are responsible for regulating taxi cabs, and we feel that Uber and other similar companies should be regulated at the municipal level.
Mostly to protect the consumer, he says, but also to introduce a level playing field. Jennings says the state legislation enacted earlier this year was unfair to Maine's municipalities.
We as a community have no ability whatsoever to place any type of regulation on these vehicles.
But the state representative who sponsored this year's TNC legislation stands by its intent.
TNCs are fundamentally different than taxis.
Waterville Democrat Henry Beck.
Taxis traditionally have been regulated at the municipal level, and that's how we should leave this. We shouldn't disrupt the law after it's been in effect for less than a year.
Uber declined to provide comment for this story. For MPBN News, I'm Tom Porter.
And at 11 minutes before 6, it's time to check the weather forecast with our meteorologist, Paul Cousins.
Clouds will slowly vanish this evening as drier air sluices into Maine. Marked cooling north near freezing, temperatures dropping to the mid-40s, Portland south. Tomorrow quite bright for all but the northern and western border, where sunshine will fade during the afternoon. Low 50s north, low 60s south. Friday will present us with rain prior to the holiday weekend. More showery along the coast. Cooler, 47 to 60 north to south. Saturday will be a partly sunny day across northern Maine, quite windy, mid-40s. Throughout western, central, down east Maine, an even blend of sun and clouds, breezy 50s. Portland south, mostly sunny, 60. Clouds congregate across the mountains and north of Bangor Sunday with a few showers, partly sunny to partly cloudy throughout the bulk of the state, and the holiday warmer and brighter. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
And that's Maine Things Considered. Thanks today to Susan Sharon, Mal Leary, Ed Morin, and Andrew Catalina. I'm Nora Flaherty, 10 minutes before 6.